Welcome back to The New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. James, a lot to get to this week, and we'll just jump right to it. I'll set them up and you knock them down. We'll take this first one from Zero Hedge. Beware the Ides of the IRS as the International Data Exchange Service launches. The IRS announced the International Data Exchange Service, IDES. If you've not heard of it, it's an outgrowth of another insidious thing you might not have heard of called the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, FATCA, which requires every single bank in the world to get into bed with the IRS to share info about customers. Like any other bankrupt government, the U.S. government has taken to intimidating its own citizens and the entire world in an attempt to make ends meet. Their hope was that the majority of people committing tax evasion would come clean and that the result, it would have some big boost in tax revenue. But the fact is tax revenues actually haven't improved at all. Looking at tax revenue as a percentage of GDP, the numbers haven't budged at all from their long-term average. FATCA hasn't done anything positive for Americans. That said, FATCA, which looks exactly like fat cat, it's what your brain wants to finish the word. FATCA has managed to destroy what little remaining credibility the U.S. government still had. Bear in mind, these are the people that spy on their allies, drop bombs by remote control, and force-fed people negative real interest rates and $18 trillion in debt. But if that weren't enough, FATCA goes after foreigners with absurd logistical challenges, commanding every single bank on the planet to comply. The ultimate irony, there are nations in the world that aren't recognized by the United States. The Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, Abkhazia, and more. Yet banks in these regions still have to sign up with the IRS. It's as though they don't exist, but they still must comply. The IRS claims so far that 145,000 financial institutions, that's 145,000 banks essentially, have already signed on to the information sharing agreements. Now, with the launch of IDES, they have an online platform to invade customer privacy at every one of those banks, and will include related links, one from Forbes that actually gives you links to the IDES website and how you can submit, essentially, and lots of handy links. IRS unleashes global FATCA data exchange, offshore transparency everywhere, James.
Well, you stole the words right out of my mouth. The Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, FATCA. If we could just buy a T, perhaps tyranny would fit the bill and we can get Fat Cat in there. This is extremely important on the global scale, not simply for Americans and the IRS and the American tax situation, although obviously that's the particular focus here, but I think the idea of what is being set up through this International Data Exchange Service is exactly the infrastructure that will, I have no doubt, be used in one form or another, even as just a template for this new global tax compliance agreement that's being worked out between the OECD nations now with however many dozens of countries signed on that are going to start sharing tax data amongst countries, including data on your personal bank account and all sorts of personal details are going to be shared amongst all these nations. In the effort, of course, of trying to crack down on those corporations that hide their billions offshore, it's certainly not to get the average person, but oh, they just might be scooped up in this net as well. So this is the framework for what global government really will be. It really will rest on a tax base that will be brought about through this type of net. And so this is extremely important for us to understand this infrastructure, and I think we probably need to continue looking at it, and hopefully I can line up someone for an interview to talk a little bit more in detail about what this is and what it's doing. But welcome to the New World Order. It's already here, and it's already being constructed behind the scenes without most people in the world even catching on. So thank you, James, for bringing this to our attention.
Well, and we thank a lot of the folks out there who submit stories to us using hashtag New World Next Week. And speaking of hashtags and the web, of course, all of these things are going to be spread out, James, on however many hundreds of thousands of new computer networks. So it's all sure to be hacked in no time. So our other related link to this first story, I'll tie in the embattled IMF head, Christine Lagarde, actually just a few hours ago from when I speak to you now, says global economic outlook still grim, even with all that cheap oil flowing here in America as folks are enjoying record low gas prices. So having said that, James, we'll move to our second story to the UK, where a story from The Telegraph, and again submitted to us via Twitter using hashtag NewWorld next week from our man at G.J. Salisbury, genetically modified crops could be planted in England this year. GM crops could be planted in England this year despite widespread opposition following a landmark ruling in Europe. The European Parliament approved a deal on Tuesday, January 13th, which will let countries decide for themselves whether they want to plant GM crops. British scientists are firmly behind genetic modification, believing that it could help farmers produce plants which are healthier and need fewer pesticides. The newer legislation, which will be in place by spring 2015, could mean that commercial GM crops, including maize and oilseed rape, are grown in Britain from this year. And it opens the door for genetically modified fruits and vegetables to be sold in British supermarkets. Under the new rules, each European country will be allowed to decide for itself whether or not to grow GM once it's been ruled safe by the European Food Safety Authority, EFSA, the EU's food safety body. The deal, James, as we jump down in the article, has been engineered by the British government, who are fed up that GM trials continue to be blocked by Germany, France, and Italy. And I think if we were to hope that GM crops and these things hadn't already, as we see they do, leaked and contaminated in the UK, we were probably kind of dreaming anyway, but we're always able here in the States to kind of point to the EU and the UK and say they banned them there, or they at least label them there. Why can't we have similar things here in the States? But now that'll be completely thrown out the window. And James, the other part I would say is, you know, to those British scientists behind genetic modification, believing it could help farmers produce plants which are healthier, which has already been shown to not be true, and need fewer pesticides, which has already shown to not be true. So we can tell them right now, neither of those two things are going to happen. James.
You're exactly right about that. And this is an interesting story for me because it's a conflict of principles. I mean, as people know who have watched the Corbett Report or New World Next Week or any of our content for a long time, yes, I am completely opposed to genetically modified organisms and this grand uncontrolled experiment with the genome of the planet, the biosphere itself that's ongoing with these. But the other principle operative here is the idea of the European Food Safety Agency dictating to all of Europe its food safety guidelines and principles. And if they happen to have a good one, like you must not do these GM trials, then we're all yay, and that's a good thing. But, you know, the exact same power that the EFSA has to say that you can't do GM trials is the same power that they could use to say you can do GM trials, or you must do GM trials, or whatever else they want to dictate to all of these states. So I think the principle here has to be that the EFSA shouldn't be the ones dictating to each individual country. It should be up to the people in Britain to stop the British government from implementing this. And obviously that's a completely different fight, but I think that the principle has to be decentralization, and it has to be as local as possible, because there's nothing whatsoever that any average British citizen can do to affect in any way the principles or guidelines of the EFSA. They at least have some sort of chance of influencing what's happening in Britain, and more of a chance what's happening locally in their own councils. So again, we have to devolve power as much as possible, and I think that's got to be the principle with these food regulations as well, because again, it's going to come down to what we can actually do about this, and when it's left to supranational bodies like the EFSA, the answer is nothing. There's nothing you can do that's going to affect their policies. So we have to get the power devolved as much as possible and bring the fight home, if that's where it's going to be.
We'll remind folks, as I was just thinking about as you were talking, James, it's like, where did I just see the phrase guerrilla gardening? And it's a new episode that you just put out in your solutions series, guerrilla gardening. So we'll include a link to that. And also just a reminder of our very previous episode of The New World Next Week, where our final story there was a good news story about community gardens that our friend Brock West has gotten involved with. And the response has been overwhelmingly positive, James.
As it should be. Again, these are the solutions that we can actually do something about, and we can't necessarily control what's happening out there, but we can control what's happening in our homes, at least to the extent that we grow it ourselves and trade with people that we know. So again, the solutions start at home.
And speaking sort of growing it ourselves and with trying to maintain the idea, James, I don't want to write checks we can't cash here, and you and I have talked about it, I think probably on air and off, that we'd love to think that we could have a good news story every week on the New World Next Week. The world isn't that dire yet that we can't find these positive things. So we're going to keep trying to give you positive news stories fraught with other implications and complications, as they're bound to be. At least we still want to kind of go with something higher, so to speak. So we'll do this again, submitted to us not with New World Next Week, but with Good News Next Week from at AphexJS via Twitter. A 15-year-old unveils an Orb 3D printer and his own new print code, and it's supposed to be 10 times faster than traditional 3D printers. When it comes to 3D printing, speed has always been kind of the problem, the thing that needed improvement. And that's what a 15-year-old is going to try and do. His name's Thomas Suarez. Back in July 2014, he announced he'd be unveiling a desktop 3D printer capable of printing at speeds which are 10 times greater than the current technologies available today. Suarez's company, Carrot Corp, has now officially unveiled their high-speed machine, and although general specifications have yet to be revealed, the Orb 3D printer seems to be quite revolutionary. It uses several technologies that are brand new to the industry. It includes what's called a modular setup, allowing for customization and the rapid switching of particular components. And James, this modular system is part of an open development kit that Carrot Corp will be making available. This means that custom modules will be able to create and used for the machine. As for the print code instructions, Thomas Suarez has even written and developed his own type of computer code, so to speak. And it starts to get into areas where I get out of my element, James. It starts to get over my head. And again, that's why the positive thing that kids half our age are now, are, you know, helping learn our way and kind of push our way forward. So the printer itself is shaped like a round fishbowl, provides a full 360-degree angle view of the object being printed. And even though the build platform is fully enclosed, Suarez and his company plan to launch, of course, a crowdfunding campaign in order to raise the necessary funding to mass produce the Orb printer. And at that point, we'll have to wait and see what the actual price tag might be for this, James. But I think this is another kind of fascinating move forward. And again, you've done a lot of work looking at sort of the future and solution-oriented things, such as possibly 3D printing.
Yes, and let's include a link back to my Solutions 3D Printing episode of the podcast, where we talked about this in great detail, because again, if the idea is to devolve power and decentralize power back down to the local level, 3D printing is an integral part of that process. The promise, the idea that one day we will be able to devolve manufacturing itself down to the local level so that you're actually manufacturing things on your desktop, I mean, through open source blueprints that you download from open source communities online, I mean, that is an incredible vision of the future. So, and again, it's what we make of it. This could go in a bad way as well. It could go in a good way. It's what we make of it. So I'm very excited about stories like this, because when people look at the current state of 3D printing technology, they often say, oh, I mean, look at it. All you can do is make these little plastic toys and it doesn't really, you know, who cares? But no, I mean, let's use our imagination a little bit and imagine 10, 20 years down the line as these developments start to add up, and now 10 times faster printing, and soon, you know, multiple material printing, and pretty soon, I mean, it's going to be an extremely interesting technology. So this is something we should be keeping our eye on, because again, it is part of a possible solution for the future in an open source community of online collaboration and the spirit of bringing power back down to the people. So let's support it and start doing this ourselves, because again, I think it's part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like it relates to even what we try and do here in some small ways. We try and be open source, we try and share it, and we want to just try and be positive to kind of move forward. And of course, that means sometimes looking at dark things. James, before we wrap up this New World Next Week episode 216, we'll look at some other hashtag New World Next Week updates, as of course, sort of the Paris circus in week two has all of the parts you would come to expect. Again, if you've been paying attention, if you read the books and did the math, you'll see these things with no surprise, unfortunately. Police commissioner investigating Charlie Hebdo case commits suicide. Meanwhile, Hollande furious after Netanyahu participates in this Paris grandstanding march where a bunch of world leaders act like they don't prosecute free speech on a daily basis. because we can see a comedian among 54 detained by French police for controversial comments, you know, using free speech to comment on a free speech issue. And of course, Theresa May, Home Secretary, says lives are at risk without data surveillance. Of course, the think about the children, we're all going to die if we don't do something about this. So all the essential things you would expect to see when you have such a kind of massive, you know, event as we did have, James, with the Paris attack. So I think those kind of show where it's going. The other stories I'll throw in quickly. German double agent working with the CIA stole a list with 3,500 spy identities. Felony charges proposed for ex-CIA head Petraeus, but his Washington buddies disagree. And in a couple of bits of shameless plugging, I've got two new interviews, James, that I have up on MediaMonarchy.com. One, I talked with a guy named Jason Bell, who's involved with the base jumping group who are going to pull out of what's essentially one of the largest one-day festivals back in my home state in West Virginia because the state police want to start fingerprinting everyone. So that's an interesting interview there. And I also talked to underground hip-hop maven Sage Francis with a short interview with him. So both those are on MediaMonarchy.com, and thanks for letting me include that in the list of links.
And thank you for doing these interviews. I hope people are checking it out. And once again, I hope people are submitting their story ideas, not just New World next week, but perhaps more importantly, good news next week. Because again, this is the point of what we're doing here, is to try to spread good ideas as well as warn people about the bad ideas. So thank you once again for rounding this all up. I'm looking forward to doing it again next week.
All right. Thanks, man. Take care.